Discord. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Melrose Sheltering in Place. I'm Nan.
And I'm Christopher. And I am so excited for you to hear my voice because I screwed up my half of the audio in the last episode. Where, if you've made it this far, you're a true fan and we really appreciate you because, you know, we've all listened to an episode of a podcast where the audio was messed up. And I know it's not easy, but it happens.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I want to shout out my friend Dustin. If you're out there and you're listening, Dustin, and possibly the one other person,
Michelle,
then you know that we took kind of a month off and we didn't really warn anybody. Well, it was more than a month, honestly, from posting to posting. It was probably more like 2 months. I don't even know. But when we posted this most recent episode, my friend Dustin was like, texted me to let me know that he was glad that Melrose Sheltering in Place is back. And I didn't even know that he listened. I didn't even really know that anybody other than the one person listened. So Dustin, shout out to you. Thanks for listening to the podcast.
Hey, you know, there's a treat that Dustin might be interested in. That I forgot to mention last time. Ooh. Which is that the show has a dedicated Instagram account now. It's at Melrose Sheltering in Place on Instagram. We are so lucky that the name length limit on Instagram is long enough that Melrose Sheltering in Place fits. So we have it.
Yay! Tiny miracles. So yes, follow us on Instagram to get all your latest Melrose Sheltering in Place news.
And the oldest stuff, because what I've been doing is, as the posts come up in Time Hop, I've been reposting a lot of the older stuff as well, so that, you know, there's throwback stuff, there's stuff for the new episodes. So it's great. And, you know, eventually I'll catch up and not have to do the throwback stuff anymore. But maybe I still will for funsies. Who knows?
When did we start doing this?
I will tell you, it was, I mean,
what is time in the pandemic?
I was going to say, obviously, it was during the pandemic. May 2nd, 2020 was our first episode.
No way. Yeah. Wow. Oh, my God, Christopher. That means that we like had our 1 year anniversary and we didn't even know. Yeah. Well, happy one. I mean, I cannot believe we've been doing this for a year. Does it feel like we've been doing this for a year?
I don't know. Everything feels like so close and yet so far away. Like
the last year has felt like nothing. Like the other day I was thinking about something at work and I was like, oh, that should have happened by now. So I went back in my email to see how long ago the person had messaged me about it. It felt like eons. It had only been 2 months, which is really not that long, you know? I don't know.
Well,
cool story, bro. But anyway, my point is that time is an illusion.
And for me, kind of recently at work, like we worked for a year and a half on a project that got canceled. And it was like that project was like a personal hell for me as well. So it's weird to think about a time before that project existed. And, you know, something that's not news to you, but haven't mentioned on the show. My entire job is ending on Wednesday after we record this. So kind of like staring down the barrel of like a very big turning point in my life because I've been working there for 13 years. So, it's very hard to think about linear time right now.
Yeah. Wow. Well, hopefully good things are on the way. Thanks. I don't know.
And speaking of which, I did think that it was kind of funny that last episode was the one that I happened to mess up my side of the audio because we talked about so many things where we're like, is this going to get us canceled now? Like,
maybe in AA, people will call that a God thing. I don't like that language personally, not because I have a problem with the God thing, but because I don't think that God like smiles down upon certain people in certain moments, but you know, whatever your spiritual experience is, some people would say that was the universe looking out for us, maybe.
Well.
Anyway. Oh, and speaking of, just a fair warning, I am trying to like get someone to do something for me for this school project, and I just got their contact information right before we started recording, so I texted them. So if they text me back and they're like, hey, I need to know this information right now, I might be a very unprofessional podcaster and just be like, hold on a minute, hey, while I respond to their text message.
That is,
but
totally
guess
cool.
What I think Dustin will understand.
Yes, Dustin and Michelle, we we know you get it. We know that you have busy lives too.
I can't get a zero on my school project just for Melrose sheltering in place.
Right. And so, and you know, like Audacity would even let us cut a little bit out if we wanted, or however that works. Or
oh my God, I guess I got to figure that out someday. But
I could also just vamp for a minute while you tend to it. That was one of a podcast that I used to support heavily, was a progressive politics one called Citizen Radio. And they used to always do that where like one of them needed to look something up and they'd be like, vamp, vamp. And so the other one would just have to talk for a while they looked stuff up.
I mean, if you listen to my old podcast that I used to be on with the crew, shout out to John and Brian and all my homies from Secretly Timid Days. We would just, I mean, John would literally just get up and go make coffee and be talking from the kitchen and then like whatever the microphone picked up. So, I mean, I'm just saying, I come from a long lineage of not very professional podcasting behavior.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to listen to the bad audio because I love hearing myself talk and I love hearing Nan talk. So even if it's not the best audio, I'm still highly committed.
Dope. Well, on that note, shall we?
Yes, these are some exciting episodes.
Oh my God, you guys, like, listen. This show is getting, it's getting juicy. It's getting, and the acting, oh my God, the acting is like, they've really dialed it into that soap opera acting, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll get to that.
Yeah, I definitely have a new favorite character. It's drunk Allison.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, the Allison alcoholism storyline is good times. All right. So let's get started. We're on episode 10 of season 3, and it is called And Justice for None. And the show opens with Billy and Susan smooching, and Susan feels bad because she betrayed Allison. And Billy assures her that she'll get over it. And right on cue, Allison's outside the door throwing mixing bowls on the stoop. Susan assures Allison that staying with Billy is only temporary, and Allison smugly says she knows it will be. Ooh. Oh, and Billy's whole attitude, like when Susan was like, I feel bad, and Billy was like, it's all Allison's fault that she's upset. I continue to be fucking pissed at Billy for acting like it's all Allison's fault that she feels upset. He sucks. Billy sucks.
Well, yeah, he's like, you know, Allison and I could be married right now, but she let her whole dad molesting her thing get in the way of my fun, and you know, she left me at the altar. And she and her sister could have murdered their dad, but they didn't, you know.
Yeah, it is. He is the worst.
He's definitely Billy. Got that pretzel mind that can just make anything be not his fault. Like,
right. And the thing is that, like, it's also like, the actual inciting incident is definitely not his fault. All he had to do, though, was try to be emotionally supportive towards his partner, and instead he got mad at her.
Yeah.
And that definitely is his fucking fault.
Yeah.
And is a wild response. But men, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
They are not known for their ability to be emotionally supportive.
Yeah. Can't live with them. Can't. Never mind. Every joke I was going to make ended up being sexist, so I'm stopping right there.
Sexist towards men?
No, toward women. But
oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, because we accept that here at Melrose Sheltering in Place.
It's,
sex is, like, misandry is acceptable.
Yes, it's not sexism if it's against a man.
Exactly. So So after the opening titles, we're treated to an aerial shot that is most certainly a postcard being wiggled around.
Did you see that? Like, they try to act like it's taken from a helicopter or something, but it's seriously, like, just a static shot, and it's wiggling around. Like, you can almost see somebody's hands an inch off screen. It was hilarious.
Okay, I am going to have to go back and re-watch it.
It was so good.
Because I remember an aerial shot, but I don't remember having that impression of it. But I feel like that's partially because for at least one of these episodes, it opened with an aerial shot. And I was so distracted by the just like sheer early 90s on brandness of the wailing guitar soundtrack that I think I wasn't really paying that close of attention to the image itself. So I will go back and check
that out. Yeah, you're going to love it. Like, it seriously looks like they sent someone to the Walgreens to get a postcard. Because they didn't have a printer that was good enough to print up a picture. So they needed something slightly higher quality than what they had. So somebody came back with like 3 postcards and that was the best one.
Oh my God. Amazing. So at the end of a meeting, Amanda asks if she can skip an important client meeting. And Allison tells her Susan lives with Billy now. Billy admits he's dating Susan, which Amanda calls rebound roulette. LOL. The super important client meeting is at a dance club for some reason, and Amanda has Peter on her arm. Bruce pisses Amanda off by calling her work a group effort, and Peter reminds her that they're going to engineer his downfall. Allison scowls at Matt and Susan and heads to the bar to get a double. Billy and Susan? I don't remember.
Matt was not there. Matt was not there. What am I even? I was trying to like gay things up a little bit and include.
We're just trying to get Matt into any scenes. I mean, Matt is about to get a little bit. He's getting some storyline in these episodes. So that's good. That's good for Matt. Although I was, this is so much later, but later on when he and what's his name hug.
Jeffrey.
When it really should be a fucking kissing situation. Mm-hmm. It was like buddies. Like they just literally became boyfriends and then they hug. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, it was almost as if you could have just had them high five and be like, good game.
Well, have you ever seen that movie Philadelphia?
I actually have never watched it.
I mean, I'll just never forget like the heterosexual characters practically fuck on a kitchen counter, and the gay characters, one of them is on his deathbed and the other one like kisses his forehead, and I was just like, this is a gay storyline, why is it like this?
Right. Yeah, but, man, the 90s, they sucked apparently. I was 12, so I don't know, but, anyway, she also meets a record exec, Allison meets a record exec named Zach Phillips. They're definitely going to bone. He's been watching her all night. For now, he invites her to his table. She gets wasted pretty quickly and leaves with Zach for a show at the Roxy. And stumbles into a guy waiting for the valet outside. Billy follows her outside to make sure she doesn't drink and drive, but she leaves in Zach's limo, and they stand up through the sunroof for conversation and kissing on the way to his place.
So this Zach guy, I did not recognize the actor at all, so I didn't look him up. But all I can think about when I think about him is that like he's like the affordable Richard Grieco. Like...
I see it. Yeah. My God. He's throwing down the exact like 90s look.
Yeah.
Like that, not really like long, but kind of floppy hair, like parted down the middle, the butt cut and the little soul patch stubble situation.
Yeah. He almost looks like somebody that Matt would date. Like he would own a gallery or something.
So Bruce dances like a madman until he keels over from a heart attack.
I have a question about this.
Uh-huh.
Do we think that Peter put something in his drink?
Oh, man. How did I not see that? I don't know. Maybe. Now that you mention it.
Because he's like, you know, we're definitely going to do something to this guy. And he never really says what.
Well, I mean, I feel like it develops over the next couple of episodes. But that would definitely make sense also as part of it.
He is a doctor. Like Kimberly, he has access to drugs and stuff.
Totally.
So, heart attack pills. So
I hadn't thought of it, but it definitely, I will not be surprised if it happens. Like, if we figure out later that that's what happened. Billy's surprised to see Allison at work, figuring she'd have called in hungover, but it's clear she's still drunk. He tells her about Bruce and Amanda and appears to let him know she'll be handling everything while he's out. Amanda and Peter take a break from lovemaking to talk about Bruce. Amanda thinks she can't go after him now, but Peter thinks there's no better time.
Yeah, Amanda tries that to also have a conscience, but Peter's not having any of that.
Yeah, yes. Amanda, true to form, does have some feelings. And it's kind of interesting because when she first met him, it was like she was trying to use him, and now it feels like the tables have turned, mm-hmm. right? Like, he's actually the mastermind, the manipulative mastermind behind this whole thing. Joe stops by Shooters for a Virgin Bourbon 7 and to talk to Jake. So a 7-Up. Her custody trial starts tomorrow, and she wants Jake to testify. He's perfectly willing to, but not without teasing her about it first. Behind them, a Miller High Life neon sign has been altered to read Nil High Life. I'm gonna have to go back and look at that too. Michael can tell Matt is anxious, and Matt decides it's a good idea to confide in him about Jeffrey's HIV status. Michael's advice is to run away. I mean, Matt, why are you talking to Michael about anything? What?
Yeah. I mean, just because you work in the same building and you used to live in the same building doesn't mean you should trust him.
Like, I feel like Matt should have the emotional intelligence to understand that Michael is not a person that you talk to about your feelings.
Especially if you're gay.
I mean, Kimberly has a gyno appointment and runs into Joe in the waiting room. She tells Joe she and Michael are married and that she's there because she wants to get pregnant. Later, Michael's angry because Kimberly comes home late. She's angry because she can't get pregnant due to the accident and kicks him out of the bedroom. Jeffrey calls Matt, but gets his phone machine. But we see Matt's there and just not taking the call. Chris tells Jane a check for fabric bounced, and she points out that she's still waiting for money from his company. He kisses her to shut her up and offers to make her a loan, which is just a ruse to get her to open a joint account with him. Matt and Jeffrey meet for lunch, and it's immediately awkward. Matt claims he's not afraid of AIDS. He's just not sure if he can commit to someone who has so much to face in their future. He says he needs more time, but Jeffrey says time's up and tells Matt to have a nice life and leaves.
Good for Jeffrey.
That's called boundaries, friends. Yeah. You know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And, you know. And then Matt's going to do what he's going to do. That's also boundaries. So, in court, Reed's mom testifies about how wonderful they are and how great their home is. And Joe's attorney doesn't cross-examine her. She's furious, but he assures her that they wouldn't stand a chance if they tried to discredit Reed's mom. When Jake takes the stand, the lawyer implies that Jake has benefited from shady deals thanks to Joe. When Amanda testifies, the lawyer brings up the insurance claim from when Jake trashed Joe's place. He then calls Matt's character into question to imply Melrose Place isn't suitable for kids because gay sex might happen there. Jane gets asked about her divorce as well as Sydney's and all those interesting things, including that Sydney lives next to Joe. Which, the way that got said, I was like, who, like, she lives next to a divorced person who, you know, used to be a prostitute, lives next door. What does that have to do with anything? Like, Sydney's not even testifying in court. Like, the way they played this, where the lawyer would be like, and where does that person live? And the person on the stand would be like, at Melrose Place. Like, it was so weird.
Yeah.
And hilarious.
You know what it reminded me of? The series finale for Seinfeld, when they were in court and, like, every bad thing they ever did was brought up.
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't. Full disclosure, I could not do Seinfeld. I've seen, like, 3 episodes, and that show depresses me. And also Jerry Seinfeld is annoying, but yeah, I mean, people who are a little bit older than me, I get it. I get why y'all like that show, but it just, I couldn't get into it. Turns out all of Joe's character witnesses aren't that great. Joe testifies that she ultimately decided to keep the baby because she was ready to be a mother. Joe testifies she ultimately decided to keep the baby because she was... Okay, yes, that makes sense. Okay. She admits that that through everything, she doesn't regret telling the Carters because it wouldn't have been right to keep it a secret, and she still holds out hope that they'll do the right thing. As they leave, Joe asks Allison if she'll be the baby's godmother. I disagree that it would have been wrong for her to keep the baby's existence from the grandparents. Hot take.
Yeah.
Grandparents are not owed anything.
Especially if their son tried to murder you on a boat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
A lot of right and wrong talk that isn't even necessarily correct in the first place goes completely out the window when there's an attempted kidnapping and murder. Sorry.
Yes. Good point. So, yeah. Disagree that it would have been wrong to keep it from them. But we're here now, so who cares? Michael comes home furious that his check from Jane Mancini Designs was signed by Chris and finds Kimberly like, bro, pick a fucking struggle. And finds Kimberly crying on the deck because she wants a baby. She wants to adopt or maybe steal Joe's baby at some point. You know, one or the other, whatever works. Matt meets with Jeffrey again and assures him that he truly wants to be with him. He still just needs Jeffrey to make a commitment if they'll be together, which Jeffrey agrees to. Which is weird because I feel like earlier... Anyway, whatever. Jack, and that's when they bro hug,
right,
like
yeah.
BFFs, and, you know, pat each other in the back. Yeah, or
bring
whatever.
It in, bro.
It was so weird. I was like, oh my God, kiss. What are you doing? Zach takes his party girl, Allison, out to dinner, and they drink a lot. In fact, she's the only woman who's ever been able to keep up with him. He wants to go dancing, but she has work in the morning. He's clearly disappointed and says he'll take her home, but that it'll be hard to get him to leave. When they get there, he assures her that he's not trying to sleep with her. He just wants to use the pool. They get naked and jump in, causing everyone in the building to emerge from their apartments. Amanda tells Allison that being a tenant doesn't entitle her to public drunkenness, and Allison calls her Warden Woodward.
I'm amazed that with all the slurring she was doing, she was able to say that. Because it's hard to say sober.
Zach and Allison wake up to the beach outside his house. He gives her two pills to help wake her up. And she stumbles into court looking freshly fucked. The lawyer decides not to put Allison on the stand, and Joe and Jake are furious with her. Zach finds Allison knocking back martinis at Shooters and tells her she hasn't lost anything if Joe's mad because real friends don't judge that way. Amanda visits Bruce in the hospital to assure him all the clients believe he just got food poisoning instead of the heart attack that Peter probably caused somehow. that's called exposition. Anyway, she then heads to Peter's office to call a client and tell him Bruce actually had a heart attack and that she's taking over the account. The judge reconvenes court in the child's supposed interest and awards custody to the Carters. Dun, dun. I am going to be really honest. Nothing about that makes sense. Like, nothing about this trial makes sense. I mean, obviously, it was all just, like, for the drama.
Yeah.
You know.
But, yeah, that's not really what happens in the world. Like.
I feel like if the grandparents brought a case against the mother, the onus of proof would be like I don't think that Joe's lawyer would even need to call that many character witnesses because the defense never made a case for why Joe sucked.
Right.
All they did was impeach our character witnesses. But I feel like to get custody for the grandparents away from the mom, you would have to affirmatively like have a case as to why the mom sucks, not just like a general they said she said argument. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. The parents of the child have first, dibs, basically, and it's hard to get the custody away from them.
It also seems like they wouldn't even entertain the thought until the baby was born, for some reason to me. Like, it seems like she would have to be demonstrably bad
right.
with the baby.
Yeah, I don't see how anyone has standing in this case. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I work for a legal services organization. I might ask the lawyers at work and be like,
can you please watch this episode of Melrose Place?
In this Melrose Place episode, they do this case. What is the legal deal here?
What's the precedence?
Anyway, what's the deal? So, yeah. Love it. Okay, so now we're on to the next episode.
Yes, season 3, episode 11. The Days of Wine and Vodka. Which I'm trying to figure out what the real, when you say the days of blank and blank, what the actual...
The Days of Wine and Roses.
Okay. Because there's a song I really love, which is The Days of Swine and Roses.
Yes, Thrill Kill Cult, yes. Baby.
Oh, yeah. They come up a lot on my radio station because I always play Thrill Kill Cult radio on Pandora when I need music.
The Days of Wine and Roses was a 60s film about some alcoholics.
Okay. And then Bread and Circuses is something different.
I don't know
what that is at all.
I don't know what that is. So, that's a kink. I'm just kidding.
Yes, obviously, as the title implies, this will be a lot about Allison. She sees Joe in the courtyard at Melrose Place and tries to talk to her, but Joe is furious with her, which is kind of funny because she didn't even make it onto the stand, and she's not mad at everybody else who did poorly on the stand. But anyway, she no longer trusts Allison, and she takes back that request for her to be the godmother, which, honestly, she should just be relieved, but...
I mean, yes. Whoever's listening, Dustin, don't ever ask me to be the godmother of your children. Riley, get on the bed. Riley, come here. Sorry, I wanted to get my dog on the bed.
No worries.
I was trying to figure out another way to do it. Come here.
Hi, Riley.
Come here and sit with me. Okay, come on, let's hang out.
Aw. Okay, Billy and Susan wake up to the alarm, which is set to 10 minutes before she needs to leave for some reason. Kind of defeats the purpose of having an alarm if you set it for 10 minutes before you're supposed to leave. But she assures Billy that they can bone the next time that they both have the day off. And he says, well, Thursday is Thanksgiving. And she says she wants to make dinner for everybody at Melrose Place as a peace offering for the building, but especially for Allison. And I'm not really sure why anybody else in the building would be mad at her. But... then she starts listing lots and lots of French items that she wants to make. This time I did not turn on the captions to get the names. But he says, turkey and yams will suffice. Over lunch, Allison asks Zach if he thinks that she has a drinking problem. And I just am amazed that she would even bother asking that because... it's obvious she does.
Well, here's the thing, too. Just a little guidance for the people out there from me, a drunk. Like, in my experience, if you ask the person that you're currently with, well, okay, it depends. Two things is going to happen. One, you're either already going to be fighting over the fact that they think you're drunk, because if they think you're drunk and they're mad about it, they're going to have told you.
Right.
Usually. But the other thing that's going to happen is... this happens a lot more often than people probably realize, and I've seen it happen. The person you're with, even if they themselves are not a drunk, are going to try to convince you you're not a drunk because...
they are...
codependency, baby! They are getting some... they are... their mental stuff and your mental stuff is coming together, and it's gelling. There's a reason they're with a drunk, and they don't want you to think you're a drunk, because then you might get sober... fuck up the whole dynamic of the relationship. Exactly. I've seen it happen. I've seen people go to AA meetings for the first time and then be like, well, my partner says I'm not. They don't think I have a problem. And I'm like, yeah, because they like you drunk. They like you. where they have, like, where they're the one that is needed. They're the one that gets to be the caretaker. They're the one that gets to be in charge because they're the one that's not crazy or whatever, you know? So just a little helpful hint from Auntie Nan.
Yeah. Over here. Yeah. And, you know, she kind of just put that out there knowing that he would never say, oh, you're terrible. Like she needs that reassurance that she's just not getting from herself, which is hard to come by when you wake up on a beach, right?
Like, right. I mean, the thing is like, okay. Let's just talk about my alcoholism. So, watching this, like, I'm like, I remember those, like, what life was like when I was drinking. And it was this all the time. It was waking up and being like, oh shit, I slept through my, you know, school, my final or my thing, or oh my God, what day is it? Or what happened last night? Or, you know, like that, like watching all the times in this episode and over the course of these episodes where she just like wakes up late and is like, oh no, I messed up the thing. Like, yeah, that's, you know, that's alcoholism.
Yeah. Zach assures her that she's fine and it's actually everybody else who sucks. And then he convinces her to buy a new car.
Yeah. Yeah, fuck those people. Let's get a sports car.
Which I'm honestly amazed that she can afford it, because not only does she no longer have a roommate, but she also is spending a lot of money on alcohol. So apparently her promotions have paid pretty well. I don't know. Or maybe she gets a lot of free drinks from fellow shooters, people could say. Bruce comes to D&D because news of his heart attack has made it into the press, thanks to Amanda. And, okay, this is also the other, like, the way they try to sound all, like, businessy on this show. Like, this is now an emergency because the company stock is plummeting. And he's worried about a takeover because somebody has already bought a large chunk of the D&D stock. So she convinces him to go home and rest and that she'll cover for him. And the funny thing was, he was like, you're right. I'll be back in a few hours. Like, just go. You don't need to be there.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do, bro?
In 3 hours, like, after you've driven, you know, what? 30 miles.
It's LA. Yeah. So like after you spent an hour in the car going one direction, what are you going to do? Like,
yeah. I'm sure sitting in the car for 4 hours total on this day is going to be great for your recovery. Anyway, Amanda calls Peter to tell him about the stock purchase and he admits that it was him. Well, them, because he created an investment group for them without even telling her. Business, stocks, money.
It's a shark attack.
Zach and Allison cruise around in her new convertible. And honestly, all I could think was, they're going to crash. They're going to crash. They're going to crash. Mm. But anyway, he calls a hotel in Santa Barbara on her new car phone. And she...
oh my God, the car phone with the actual, like, curly cord and everything. Yep. I remember in the bag, like, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember. Yep. So my first job in advertising, I actually got it just because I kind of cold called a woman who by herself was running a branch of a pretty famous agency in Albuquerque. And she did one of those office shares where, like, her and several other people shared a receptionist and all that. But I'll never forget, they told me, they're like, well, she's out of the office right now. You can try her her mobile number, but you probably won't catch her because it's in the car. It's a car phone. I was like, wow, car phone. But anyway, Allison says that she can't stay overnight in Santa Barbara. And then for some reason believes him when he says that they can drive back later that night. But soon enough, they're drinking in front of the fireplace, and she never wants to go back. He showers her with compliments, and she goes to put another log on the fire, but when she returns to the couch, he's already passed out. And then Allison wakes up 15 minutes before her meeting, which is in downtown LA. I don't know how far that is from Santa Barbara, but she's not going to make it. And Zach convinces her that she could just take the day off because it's not a client meeting. It's just a work meeting. So she calls.
Because that's how meetings work.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, yeah.
They only matter if somebody who's paying us is in it. Strategy, who cares? So she calls in and tells Amanda's assistant, which I love that Amanda's assistant is a dude.
and his name is Bob.
Yeah. And I just had this feeling that eventually Bob and Matt are going to date. Anyway.
Interesting.
She calls in and tells Amanda's assistant that she'll be in for the afternoon meeting. So Allison pulls up to her lunch meeting with tires screeching to find Billy and Amanda waiting. And Amanda's furious because she had to cancel three other meetings to familiarize herself with this lunch client. And she says that if Allison took the morning off to buy the car, she's fired. But Billy says, correctly, that she definitely did it yesterday and then got drunk. Allison denies it, but Amanda points out that she's wearing the same clothes as the day before. Susan comes home wanting to go to the movies, but Billy doesn't want to. He's pouting because of Allison's antics and says that it's hard to watch her sabotage her life. Allison hasn't said whether she's coming to Thanksgiving yet, and Susan thinks that they should invite Zach and that it should just be the four of them. The next morning, Billy waits outside Allison's to catch her and invite her and Zach to Thanksgiving, and she agrees to come. Amanda tells Peter that she can no longer in good conscience ruin Bruce, who has lost his retirement money due to all of it being in D&D stock, which has plummeted in value. Peter says, too late. Everything's already set in motion. Allison knocks back vodka and calls Zach because he's late meeting her. He has friends over and says to go without him to the Thanksgiving and to come over later. She grabs a bottle of wine and heads to Billy's. And when Allison says Zach's not coming, Susan says that'll give them a chance to talk. And the dinner turns into an intervention, and Allison flies off the handle. She insists that she's fine with them being a couple, and they can't handle that she's not mad about it. Billy tries to stop her from leaving, but says he doesn't know why they thought that they could even talk since she showed up already drunk. So then Allison drives drunk and gets distracted hanging up that car phone after angrily hanging up on Zach, and ends up swerving to avoid running down a cyclist who ends up going over the hood. Over in everybody else's world, Jane invites Sydney to go home to Thanksgiving. I'm sorry, go home to Chicago for Thanksgiving. And Sydney is understandably apprehensive. She doesn't want to see their parents ever again. Michael and Kimberly visit an adoption agency to learn how much it would cost to adopt a baby, which is anywhere from $2,500 to $100,000. I'm just going to make a quick correction in here for the future historians that I always talk about anywhere. There we go. Michael reminds her that they also have medical school loans, but they can totally adopt a kid if she can find the money. So you can already picture all kinds of ways that could be famous last words. A sleazy guy shows up to Shooters to shake Jake down with a protection racket, which is not something I normally associate with Los Angeles. Everything I've ever seen like that in the media has always been in New York City. he wants $1,000 a month, and Jake throws him against the wall. But the guy says the offer is still on the table, and Sydney tells him that she knows the type because she used to see them in action around Lauren's place, and that he actually should take the deal. He says they should go to hell. Matt and Jeffrey meet Matt's parents for lunch, which goes swimmingly, and he asks if Jeffrey can come to Thanksgiving dinner, and they say yes.
Did we know that his parents were so accepting?
I'm trying to think. So they showed them one time before, and I remember there was a big deal, but I can't remember what it was about. Like, What was going on with Matt? I remember there being something with Matt's parents, but I don't remember. I think maybe that episode was the one where they kind of finally came to accept it. I don't know.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, I just wanted to say, so the guy that plays the gangster guy, I was like, that guy's familiar. So I just looked it up, and he was in The Sopranos.
Oh, nice.
He played Mikey Palmisi, which, yeah, I mean, we won't go into all that. Yeah.
Typecasting.
Sopranos heads will know who that was. But, okay. Yeah, I was like, oh, interesting. He's playing a... I feel like the people that play gangsters, like, it... This is really common. They play gangsters in multiple things. It's kind of just a thing. Like, he was also in Scarface, the TVs. Oh, Sacrifice. I can't read. Anyway, whatever. yeah, anyway, he was in Sopranos. Fun fact.
I saw
Mikey Palmisi.
A really funny TikTok about a woman who has played a stripper like 5 times. And then there's that guy who always plays a newscaster, and he specifically goes out for those roles on purpose. But
I feel like it would be a good way to make a living is like hone a certain kind of character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like characters, like gangster characters, right? This guy shows up, he's got all the mannerisms of a gangster, he's got that way of talking or whatever. And it's like, yeah, if you could just, if you're not interested in being a full blown movie star or whatever, or you're not, you know, then it seems like it would actually make a lot of sense to kind of figure out your niche and then just do that thing.
Totally. I might consider it if I could act at all, but.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. Definitely. Actors are weird.
yes, but that doesn't mean we don't like you, actors. Don't get mad.
Oh, no, we need you. Yeah. We need you to be in our shows, like Melrose Place.
Can you imagine life without movies and TV? I can't.
Last night, I was laying there, and I was like, can it just be okay that the only thing I really love is television? Like, is that okay?
So I used to read a book a week, and it was on the bus. And ever since I stopped commuting, I stopped really reading. Like, I've maybe read 7 books total in the last 7 years, and I feel bad, but there's a lot of good movies and TV, and I watch a lot of them. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm in a real existential place lately, but you know, I'm like, can you just live a whole life and watch a lot of TV and enjoy it, and that's okay? Like, you didn't really do anything. I don't know. Not you, me. I'm talking about me.
I think as long as you're taking care of your mental health and you're getting outside for some fresh air sometimes, I don't see a problem with it. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, I do that.
I mean, the movies and TV are to us what the theater was in the 1600s, right? Like,
good point. Most people's lives are completely pointless. Is what I got from that story. Thank you.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, we have a lot of entertainment available to us, and it's good, and
yeah,
we should enjoy it and not feel bad about it.
That's true.
And you know, back in the day, you had to be rich to go to the theater. So really, if we don't take advantage of all the entertainment that's available to us, we're actually like betraying those who came before us.
Oh my gosh.
I can justify anything. Just watch me.
I love it. Yeah, please. I will call you next time I'm having this crisis again.
I'm so here to support you for sure.
Pep talk me.
Yeah. Kimberly visits that fertility doctor who again tells her that she can't carry a baby to term. He wants her to visit a psychiatrist, but she decides to just ask if he knows anything about black market babies.
I know. Like, you just, what? Like, oh my
gosh. It just seems like he's the wrong guy to ask. Like,
yeah. I mean, I feel like if you're talking to the actual fertility doctor, he's not going to be helpful on the black market baby situation.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not saying I know who to ask, but that's not the one. Should I Google how to adopt a black market? I'm just kidding. I'm not really typing that. Anyway, he's rightly appalled that she even asked, and she says it's easy for him to pass judgment when he has 3 healthy children. the implication being that she could kidnap one or more of them.
Oh my God.
That's how I read that anyway. And then she runs into Joe in the lobby, and Joe tells her about the Carters being awarded custody. What amazing timing. That mob guy from before waits in the alley for Jake, and when Jake says that he won't pay them, he and another mob dude beat him up and tell him he has 24 hours to pay. Jeffrey comes to Matt's for dinner, and Matt's mad because his dad wants to tell everyone at Thanksgiving that Jeffrey and Matt are just friends. And they decide that they can't go if that'll be the case. And I say good for them. On Thanksgiving Day, Matt goes to his parents' place with dessert, but says that he and Jeffrey aren't coming. What a great son. He brought the dish that he said he was going to make, even though he's not staying.
This is a masterclass, okay? Masterclass in boundaries, kids. Yeah. Because holding up your end of the bargain, right? Like doing the thing that you committed to do it while maintaining the thing you're not willing to do. Mwah, beautiful. Yeah. Love to see it. I mean, it's stellar performance, yeah. Matt.
Awesome. So then Kimberly goes to Joe's with a proposal. An indecent. When you say indecent proposal, does that only apply to sex things or is it just all bad things?
I mean, I feel like I've only ever heard it in the context of that movie. So I don't know. It's not really a phrase that I'm hearing like all the time, you know? Like,
here's a shocker for you. I've never seen Indecent Proposal.
I actually haven't either. Oh my God.
A movie that should neither of us, we should.
I know. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's probably okay. People talk about it a lot. Anyway, she wants to deliver the baby secretly at the beach house a week early and then falsify a fetal death certificate and say the body was cremated. Joe wonders why she would do all that, and Kimberly pretends that it's just because it's the right thing to do. She invites Joe to the beach house for Thanksgiving and says not to tell anyone, even Michael, about the plan.
Joe's face when Kimberly first said, I have an idea, and then said the idea, Joe's face cracked me up. It was like, what the fuck? It was so funny to me, her face. Anyway, it was hilarious.
And I'm trying to figure out if there is any precedent for maybe Joe should know by now not to talk to Kimberly at all. Like, has Kimberly already shown herself to everybody to be diabolical or just to certain people? Like, because Joe doesn't seem to worry yet. And she should be worried.
That's a good question. I feel like Joe and Kimberly really haven't spent very much time in each other's orbits. Yeah.
Kind of like how weird it was when we found out that Chris and Jake hadn't even met yet. Like, and I'm still not sure if that's true. Like, were they not at Shooters at the same time at one point? I don't know.
I also kind of also, though, like Kimberly and Joe, I feel like maybe haven't spent. But Joe definitely has to know that Michael sucks. And right. Kimberly and Michael are married. So, like, if Kimberly takes the baby, then it would also end up with Michael?
Yeah. Huh. That's weird. But, you know, she's desperate, right? So.
I mean.
So that mob dude from before waits at the mailboxes at Melrose Place to talk to Sydney about Jake. And somehow he knows that she's not going to Chicago for Thanksgiving. How that is possible, I have no idea. But it all...
Oh, we figure out later how that's possible. Oh,
okay. And it turns out that he does recognize her from when she worked for Lauren. So earlier when Sydney says that she knows the type, what really... she was actually around him and didn't really recognize him, but so he says that if she will sleep with his boss's friend, then they'll leave Jake alone. She agrees to do it. And on Thanksgiving Day, she goes to the hotel, and that's when we learned that the boss's friend is Chris.
That's how I figured that he knew.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because, like, I had the same question you did. When he said it, I was like, how does he know all this?
Yeah.
But then when Chris was the one in the room, I was like, oh, that's probably how he
knew. Yeah. He would have passed that information, which he would have gotten from Jane. Got it. Yeah. Okay. He says that she can go if she wants to, but if she does, Jake will be unrecognizable to his own mother. Is she still alive? She is, yeah. So she cries and starts undressing, which, let's be real, that probably turns him on way more.
Totally.
Wait, and did he and Jane start doing it yet?
I don't think so.
Oh. So
this whole storyline is very weird.
Yeah. At the beach house, Kimberly gives Joe a cranberry juice cocktail and tell her that she's her last hope. And Joe agrees. And that's the episode.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, well, here we are at the doctor who rocks the cradle. sure. That title is stellar. Okay. I also feel like, okay, wait a minute. It's like all these are like plays on movie, mm-hmm. like, wait, yeah, movie titles and like, anyway.
Can I just say, what's that?
Oh, nothing.
Oh, I was just going to say, to me, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle is actually a scary movie because the stuff that happens in that movie could actually happen. Like, there's nothing really unrealistic in that movie. And to me, that's the scariest kind of movie. Like,
yeah.
Most horror movies are not that scary because you're just like, well, this could never happen. But that could totally happen.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Oh, my God. I haven't seen The Hand That Rocks the Cradle in so long. But I do remember watching that movie. And it was wild. Yes. So, after reassuring her that everything will be okay, the officer talking to Allison at the scene of the accident tells her it's time for her breathalyzer test. She's over the legal limit, and the officer places her under arrest. The next morning, she uses her phone to call Billy to ask him to post the $500 bail that afternoon. He tells Susan their weekend plans are canceled since he needs that money for the bail. Amanda oversees an account shuffling meeting and gives away Allison's. She asks Billy to stay behind because she'll need his help, but can't tell him why yet. Mm. Billy brings Allison back to Melrose Place, and she goes immediately to the freezer for some vodka and then asks him to spend the night because she doesn't want to be alone. He says no because him and Susan have plans, which of course sets her off. Amanda's exhausted after her dinner date with Peter, but he has lingerie and lovin' in mind. He asks her to watch Bruce like a hawk and keep him informed of any changes in his behavior.
Which is a funny reversal because, remember, before Michael blackmailed her and said that he had to watch Peter like a hawk. So,
oh yeah,
everyone thinks that she's just some amazing spy, I guess.
Amanda visits Allison to let her know she can have all the time off she needs because she gave away her client. She then heads to Bruce's, who tells her D&D is being saved by a merger, after which they'll be Southern California's largest agency. Billy meets Allison at Shooter's, and she says she made a mistake and wants to be with him again. Oh, that my God.
Cracked me up. I could not believe that. How desperate.
God. Although, also big, this, it totally makes sense for this, for her character. Like, she's in the throes of her alcoholism. She's lonely. She's like, you know, all this shit's hitting the fan, and she's like reaching out for the one person that she, you know, thinks can be there for her or whatever.
Yeah.
She says he's the only good thing that ever happened to her and was the reason she was previously able to quit drinking. He says they can't get back together and asks about Zach and reminds her he's with Susan and that he's in love with her. He doesn't believe her when she says she's drinking plain soda, and she slurps it all up and says he'll never know for sure.
Like, you can't smell vodka in a glass even after it's okay. gone. But
yeah, guess what, everybody? People know. Anyway, Zach shows up at Allison's with the keys to her car, which he's had fixed. She's mad that he wasn't there for her when it happened, and he says he blew it off. He says he blew it, and it'll never happen again. He assures her that he's not just a fair weather relationship, and drives her to court, where Allison is sentenced to alcohol abuse counseling and a year's probation. Bruce calls Amanda in to let her know that rumors of the merger drove their stock prices up, and the other agency pulled out of the deal. Huh? Because Amanda was the only other person who knew, Bruce knows she betrayed him, and he fires her. The big trick. Jane and Chris come to the design studio to pick up the check for $500,000 to expand the business. He leaves with it to deposit it. Kimberly visits a patient who's scheduled to deliver a stillborn the following afternoon and lets Joe know they can have an opportunity to induce labor at the beach house. Joe makes reservation for herself and an infant to fly to New York.
I have a question. This is definitely not something I know anything about at all. Do they sit around and like wait extra time for a stillborn? Like, or do they just, I would think they would just induce, like.
Well, but she might be saying that they are going to induce, because it says scheduled to deliver a stillborn. So they would, it's on the schedule to induce it.
Yeah.
Is what I think is happening. It's just that, like, they, you would want to do it in a timely fashion as possible, but yeah.
But it's not like an emergency.
I don't, not in my understanding of it. I mean, I work around repro, but I am not myself an OBGYN. So I don't know every single solitary thing, but they can, a stillborn can just be in you for a while.
Okay.
In fact, there are places that, there are kinds of hospitals, like Catholic hospitals, that even might not want to induce, like would want to wait for natural. Anyway, oh. It's complicated.
Good to
fuck know. Catholic hospitals, by the way. Just so everybody knows.
We are.
All right.
That's our official stance on this podcast, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, fuck Catholic hospitals. They are trash. Kimberly visits a patient who's scheduled to deliver. They make sure Jake sees them leaving Melrose Place with a picnic basket. Picnic basket. He says he never realized Joe and Kimberly were friends, and they say pregnancy has a way of bonding people. What? At the beach house, Kimberly administers the injection and labor begins. Joe gives birth to a boy. Kimberly arrives at the hospital and pulls the old switcheroo. She tells Amanda, Jake, and Jane that the baby was delivered stillborn and excuses herself to do paperwork.
And I still had a hard time.
I don't understand this
because they delivered a stillborn, and she pretended that the stillborn was Joe's baby and cremated it so that. Did she need the ashes, or did there just,
I guess,
need to be no baby? I don't know.
I guess my question is this. Okay, the quote switcheroo, but they already knew that baby was stillborn that belonged to that other person. So, like, how do you basically account for the same baby's body twice?
Right.
Like, what's this? You know, does that make sense what I'm saying? Like,
well, and so,
I don't know how they pulled this off is what I'm saying, I guess.
Yeah, because it's so confusing because when Kimberly supposedly delivers Joe's baby on the side of the road or whatever, like, she never brought in the dead baby and showed it to
right.
anybody. And I think that you would have to do that. I don't know how it works.
Right. And also, like, that would have nothing to do with this other stillborn baby. I get that the idea is that they use that baby to be, like, Joe's baby. But then what about the other people? Aren't they going to wonder about their baby?
Yeah.
I am so, like, it does not make sense.
The only thing that I can think of is that she cremated it and split the ashes. And so she's like, here's your stillborn baby's ashes. And then I have these ashes in case I need to prove that Joe's baby was cremated too.
Sure. this situation does not sound realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, shocker. It's okay, so Jane calls Chris, but gets his phone machine and says she'll meet him that night. Meanwhile, he brings diamond earrings to Sydney. She tries to blow him off, but he says she can't do that anymore or Jake might get hurt. The next morning, Kimberly starts to obsess over the baby and even whips out a tit for him to latch onto.
I wonder if she managed to get herself to lactate. Because otherwise, poor kid, right? Can you imagine all that work and not getting a damn thing?
The Carter's lawyer comes to the hospital to question Kimberly and Joe. He says he'll confirm everything against hospital records and that the Carters will pay for the baby's funeral. Joe says he's arranged for the child to be cremated and that she wants no further contact from them. Kimberly ominously tells Joe she has nothing to worry about. Jane is summoned to the bank because 20 checks have bounced, and she says that it's not possible because Chris deposited $500,000. But he tells her the balance is zero. It turns out Chris didn't deposit the check. I mean, I think we saw that coming. But cashed it instead. Meanwhile, Chris absconds to the desert with Sydney in a limo. Jake comes to Jane's looking for Sydney, and Jane realizes she left with Chris and all the money. Joe comes to the beach house to get the baby, and Kimberly says the baby's dead, and she has the death certificate to prove it. Dun-dun. Oh, my God. Page cliffhanger. Page turner. I don't know what I was going to say. But anyway, this it's like every episode ends on, like, the most amazing note.
Well, and I love this because now it's going to be like, well, she could go to the cops and get a DNA test done, but she's not going to want to because it's convenient for her if everybody thinks the baby's dead. What will she do? Like,
yeah, it's also, what did Joe think anyway? This is amazing.
Yeah. I'm going to be thinking for a long time about the mechanics of the old switcheroo though. Like,
yeah, none of it. I think the harder you think about it, the less it's going to make sense.
Yeah. Like, you know, when you're watching and you're like, was I paying enough attention? Because I feel like I wasn't paying enough attention, but maybe it just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, this show does not try very hard to make sense. So it does. It makes sense that it did not make sense.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that was an adventure. And I am definitely glad that we are full on into the soap opera mode. It's a lot more enjoyable than, you know, Billy
gets a credit card. Yeah. I will never, ever forget that. I will never forget that. I will never forget it. Like, years and years from now, when I maybe have dementia, it might be the last fact I remember. Like, that I watched an episode of this show and the entire storyline was Billy gets a credit card.
Like, as your dementia starts to set in, you'll be at a store and you'll go to use your credit card. And you'll be like, credit card? Why? Billy. Did Billy ever get a credit card?
Does Billy have a credit card? To this day, I'm not sure we know.
He must have one by now. If he was able to move to New York for a while, like...
Yeah.
He has a credit card.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, kids, that's the episode.
Yeah.
It was... follow us on @ Melrose Sheltering in Place, right?
Yeah, Melrose Sheltering in Place on Instagram. We finally did it. We're official.
We both make TikToks sometimes. I'm an anarchist on TikTok as well.
And I'm Xtofer575 there. And speaking of which, that viral TikTok I had is now at over 2.2 million views. Which is crazy. Just ridiculous. Although I will say, thankfully, the dumb comments have finally stopped. Like,
that's good.
People have finally quit asking me the same questions over and over again. So,
way to go, people.
Yeah. You finally learned to read the other 700 comments.
Cool. Well, this has been the EP.
Yeah.
And we appreciate y'all being around.
Thanks for making Thank it all you. The way through that last one with the bad sound.
And if you didn't, we forgive you. Yeah, exactly. It's fine.
If you just skip to this one, that's fine too.
And yeah, I have nothing else.
Yeah, me either. Really, the whole work thing is all about all that's going on, but it's not that exciting.
Well, kids, we need like a signing off tagline or something. Oh, maybe. Totally. I don't know. Who knows?
Billy, get that credit card. I don't know. We'll work on that. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, y'all. Bye.